tuned in to the Behind the Scenes podcast with your host, Man Robinson, the place where educational, motivational, and inspiration collide with innovation. Be entertained while learning from some of the best actors, directors, and producers in the industry today with self-help tips that you can apply in your career. We don't just talk about it, we be about it.
So, like I said, welcome back to Behind the Scenes with Man Robinson. Our guest is amazing. Like I said, in the first part of this show, she has a lot of accolades, but we're going to go down a few of them because there's so many of them. So she is a filmmaker and producer, FaithWorks Studios. She's directed things like Under New Management, The Nikki Howard Story. She's Chicago PD, TV series, FBI. A couple indie films of her own that she has, and of course, the one that came out this year, The Clark Sisters, which they're from my hometown and her hometown. So that movie actually broke records. We're going to let her tell you what the records were, and we're going to go from there. So, Christine, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
Christina Swanson in the house, right?
Yes.
So, let me tell you real quick before we get into it. The subject of our show is not only black women in the industry, but black women who break barriers and high achievement like yourself. So that is what we do here. That's what our subject here is going to be. So our audience are potential filmmakers as well, and they also are fans of your work in different movies that you have done. So we like to give pointers and things as well as we go along. So your movie, let's start. Where do you want to start? Would you like to start with, let me tell you something. I've seen Black Korea. And I'm going to tell you what amazed me by that movie is a lot of things. First, the way it looked. The imagery was over the top. But I want to know how you got Jason Weaver to dig so deep into his character like that. That was awesome.
Well, I would love to take credit for Jason Weaver's talent, but a lot of times a director's job is to cast well. So if you cast a talented person like Jason Weaver, then they make you look good, right? So yeah. Jason, come on, he's an industry veteran. He's been doing this for a long since he was a child. So I think our producer, Patty Kim Gill, had a relationship with Jason's wife or ex-wife, who was also Blasian, Black and Korean. So she knew that, you know, Jason had some familiarity with Blasian women, and that maybe he would have some context that he can bring into the storytelling. So she reached out to him, and he said, sure, send me the script. He read it right away, and he's like, I'm on board. And I think Jason was always looking to do something that is dramatically compelling and that pushes him outside of what you typically see him in. So Jason, actually, I mean, I loved him from ATL. He was like one of my favorite characters on ATL because he has a natural fluidity when it comes to coolness.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he can make that resonate on screen. So I've always had that kind of admiration for him. So when I had the opportunity to work with him, it was a no-brainer. And he knew the requirements of the character, and he just kind of really dug deep in a dark place to bring him to light, you know. And we had a lot of discussions about it, and it was a pleasure to work with Jason.
Yeah, you know what I liked about it was I didn't know it was him. Okay, it was a lot of shadow work on that.
That's right.
And when he came out of the shadow, I was like, because in ATL he showed a lot of levels of talent.
Yes.
But I have never seen it where he was able to go that far.
Yeah.
In anything I've ever seen, so I was so happy when I seen that. So great job on the story, the whole thing was awesome. And the name of the film is Black Korea, right?
Mm-hmm.
Black career. Now you say Blasian. Did Kevin Hart, not Kevin Hart, Cat Williams come up with that term, or is that a real term?
You know what? That's a popular term now for people who are Black and Asian.
Yeah.
So I've been using Blasian for a long time. So maybe it's just getting popular, but because I am one, I've been familiar with the term for a long time.
Well, it's dope. It sounds dope, and it is dope, and you're dope. The movie was dope. I like how it all played together. Also, like how the Clark sisters play together, How did that come about? How'd you end up with being a director on that?
I interviewed, like, it wasn't, it was like just a job opportunity that came up, and I had an interview, and I knew, and I was actually directing Chicago PD at the time that I got the call. And I was trying to, like, do the TV directing thing, and so I was really focused on that track. So when I got a call to do to interview for Clark Sisters, I remember my TV directing friend was like, "Christine, you can't do no Lifetime movie because you're a TV director. You don't want to go backwards or whatever." And, like, the funny thing is, nothing could be further from the truth, because here's the thing. I'm a filmmaker. I had an opportunity to make a movie, and I had an opportunity to make a movie about homegrown talent from my hometown. So I did not care that it was Lifetime or whatever, because it's just an opportunity to really work on your storytelling skills. And to Lifetime's credit, they gave me a great budget. I had a great Canadian producer, and the executives really supported me in everything that I needed to do. We had Queen Latifah,
yeah,
Mary J. Blige, and Missy Elliott as executive producers who were active in promoting the movie. I was like, I can't lose. Like, why wouldn't I do this? And so that didn't matter to me. You know, I didn't care that it was Lifetime, whatever. And actually, again, they marketed the heck out of this movie. They did a great job of marketing. And then that's the kind of partnership you want, is someone who knows how to market these movies in a way that they can get out to your audience. So that was great. So I had actually auditioned and interviewed multiple times. Because I was in the thick of doing another job, you know, I really couldn't sit down with the producers and the network. So we had a lot of phone interviews, and I just conveyed to them a few things. One, my vision for the storytelling. And two, I told them, listen, I'm an award-winning filmmaker from Detroit.
Tell them.
It would behoove you not to hire me to do this movie, and I will consider it an act of service to be able to properly tell the story of these women who are legends in my hometown. Like, it would be an honor for me to do it. So after a lot of that back and forth, I finally got the job. So that it was a process. It wasn't just like it landed on my lap, but it was close, because I think they saw the Mickey Howard story, and they were like, "Can you do that?" Like, I can do better. I can do that and better. Like, you know, so if that moves you, then I'm your girl, you know?
Well, I'm glad that they went with you and you went with that, because you know how Detroit is. Detroit will stand with you. And the fact that you're a director, you're a black woman, and you're from where, you know, the Clark Sisters originated from, we're going to stand behind it. We're going to support it. We're going to brag about it. We're going to watch it.
That's right.
And we won't feel real unless those elements are all together. And it did feel real, 100%.
That's cool. And most importantly, like, look, I'm from 8 Mile in Wyoming.
Word.
It's like, I just wanted us to be frame right. I just wanted us to be, like, you know, just, it had to feel right. And, I knew I couldn't hold my head up in Detroit if I didn't do it right. So that kind of pressure was helpful too, because I was going to go out swinging, you know? So, again, I was very proud to do it. And I was raised, like, I wasn't coaching. I was raised AME. So I went to Oak Grove AME Church on Cherry Lawn in Pembroke. But it's like, I know the community of Detroit church folks, and there's a level of, there's an endearing quality in terms of the way that black people do church and do God. I wanted that to be respectfully reflected on screen. And I just felt I had my finger on the pulse of that, because I was raised in that. And that's still part of who I am today. So as well as being like just a lyrical and poetic storyteller. And I didn't want to do Clark Sisters cookie cutter. I wanted to do something that was like memorable and outstanding, you know? so that, you know, now I can go to Detroit and I I directed the Clark Sisters movie and like, you know, and I can hold my head up high because I did right by Detroit.
Yeah, you did right by Detroit, and obviously you did right by the whole nation because you broke a record of how many, I don't know, 13?
14 million and counting.
14 million. You know why? It's because you are a dope-ass director, and your vision came out across the screen exactly the way realness that it was supposed to.
Oh, thank you.
If you were to portray Detroit in the wrong way, it wouldn't happen. That's just plain as
it was scary, dude. I'm going to tell you.
Yeah.
It was scary to make it, to not make it right. And we had a lot of things that went against us because we couldn't even shoot in Detroit. Like, that would have been ideal to shoot that mug in Detroit.
Yeah.
But it's just, again, those tax credits is a real issue because you're talking about a savings of maybe $1 million or more by shooting in Canada, and you can't turn that down. So, but because I knew I didn't have that, you're shooting in Canada. They don't have real looking black folks who look like they come from Detroit. Not an abundance of that. Yeah. So you have all these factors working against you. But I was able to kind of use the variables that I had and try to maximize it. And thankfully, you know, it worked.
Well, you know, to add on that, there was a movie 2 or 3 years ago called Detroit. That's the title, Detroit.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Good movie, but it didn't get that Detroit push because it was shot in Boston, was the one thing.
Oh.
And of course, you can get the inner city to look like Detroit. But this is at a time in Detroit when it was real Detroit, like the 60s, 60s, 70s, when it has to look a certain type of way. Yeah. And that didn't happen. And that was one of the reasons I was called upon for the Donald Gorman story because Coke Daniels is actually doing a movie, so he brought me in the board because he knew I'm from Detroit and we can make it look how it's supposed to look. Great accomplishment on that. Mm-hmm. But let's go back to the topic. The topic is black women who break down barriers, right? Mm-hmm. Directors, filmmakers. You said, and I know this, but I wanted to hear you say it, Mary J. Blige, Missy Elliott, and Queen Latifah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you're talking about breaking down barriers, the barriers are broken down off the rip with those three powerhouses, and then you come in and deliver a masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
How was it working with three women that you knew had already broken down barriers?
Well, here's the thing. Like, I've never met any of those three women.
Not even during the movie?
Not at all. I've never personally met them. I talked to Queen Latifah twice on the telephone, and her production company was very hands-on in terms of the production part of it. But here's why those three women are important, okay? And it's like, and here's why it was necessary, even though I never worked with them one day on set. I never met them. Doesn't matter. For 15 years, the producer tried to get the Clark Sisters movie off the ground, shopped it everywhere, could not get traction, right? The minute she gets Queen Latifah on board, it's greenlit.
Hmm.
That speaks volumes to the level of muscle that Queen Latifah brought to the table. And on top of that, Queen Latifah was like, let me get two of my friends too, you know? And with them attached, it just got the attention of the right people in terms of our audience and the nation. And it just piqued their interest anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we had people who were going to tune in because these three women were involved in terms of loaning their name and their muscle to make sure this story got told.
Wow.
That is important in and of itself. Doesn't matter that I didn't meet them. I didn't, you know, they weren't hands-on a day-to-day kind of production level. They were primarily the muscle behind a movie to get it greenlit, and that's very important in and of itself. The next very important thing that the producer did on top of getting Queen Latifah on board was to hire a director like myself. Pretty much, you know, the vision that I had for the movie and that I realized for the movie really worked out in terms of the success that the movie's experiencing And mainly that has to do with the way that people respond to the emotional elements of the storytelling, and that comes through the acting and through the music and through the cinematography and the lighting and all of that. So it was a calculated, thought out process that required a lot of work, effort, blood, sweat, and tears, and in the end turned into a movie that the country responded to in a profound way.
And they still are.
Yeah.
So that's the whole point we're trying to display to the audience, that, you know, those barriers were broken down, and the power of that, once that happens, of Queen Latifah and the other two women, of not even being on set, but the name holding that much weight.
That's right.
Black women. So that's powerful. So how many days of shooting did you have on that film? So
we shot 19 days, and with roughly, I would say, 3+ weeks of pre-production. So it was 19 days to cover 40 years of storytelling, and all those different scenes that you saw, including scenes that were cut out that didn't make it into the final cut. It was fast paced. I mean, it was grueling and fast paced, but I come from like independent filmmaking, and I'm a guerrilla filmmaker. I went to NYU. Spike Lee was my directing teacher. This is guerrilla filmmaking 101, you know, but really high level guerrilla filmmaking. It's like, I'll give you $2 and a camera, and then you come out with a hit at Sundance. You get it? Like, it's like, it was never mattered to me what the budget was or how many days that we had. I'm like, you give me the parameters and let me get to work.
Well, you did that before, and you did it. I know you did it before, because I didn't witness it. You know, I'm an independent filmmaker myself, and we guerrilla shoot all the time as well. But your movie, back to Black Korea,
right?
2 days.
2 days.
Right. 2 days.
Yeah.
On that type of quality of a film, and the story was told. You were able to tell the story. I don't know, you don't want to get too far into it, but how was that? Like, to know, did you only have 2 days, or did you say, I only want to do it in 2 days?
Listen, it's, you know, every day has a price tag to it, right? Mm-hmm. That's all we could afford. Like, honestly, I wouldn't have mind 4 or 5 days to shoot that. And it's just more time, and money just allows you more flexing time, you know? But there wasn't a lot of money to spend. So the time went into Black Korea to make it as poetic and prolific as we could. The time went into the pre-production. Mm-hmm. There's so much planning that went into that film, way more time than the time that we spent shooting. Like, we easily spent like a month in pre-production, not every day 10 hours, but every day putting in some thought as to how we were going to plan this out to the letter, so that we could maximize the time that we had. And that was really a tribute to, again, Patty, Kim Gill, and Genya was our other producer on the project as well. And just good producing afforded us the opportunity to do good filmmaking, you know. And there was nothing that I needed that they did not provide. And they were, you know, they just took care of everything so I could focus on the creative part. So that's where great producing comes in, that supports the vision of the director and the storytelling. And we got a lot done. And, you know, we maximized like the house that we shot in for the grandmother. Mm-hmm. We use that for multiple locations. We used the kitchen, the living room, the basement was their old apartment, like, you know, that the Korean mom was trying to escape. Mm-hmm. You know, that, but that was in the same house. You know, we just turned it, the camera, in a different direction and slightly underlit it so it looked darker. We could have been in another state, and we were in our minds. So. Yeah. We just creatively use all the locations in a way that just maximize our resources.
Well, you did a great job, and you mentioned it that you were taught by Spike Lee. So we're going to take a break, and we're going to get back to that, because I got to ask you about Spike Lee, if you don't mind. So right now we're going into what I call a random thought. So we'll be right back after this.
And now it's time for Man Robinson's random thought of the day.
So we all know by now I do something called a random thought. And today's random thought is, it's very simple. It's very simple. All of them are not going to be huge. But why was there a barrier in the first damn place for black women to have to break down? It's a great question, isn't it? I'll tell you what, if you want to respond to that question, you can follow me on Instagram or ask me on Instagram at Man Robinson with two N's, or you can leave a message on this podcast. Back to the show.
Welcome back to Behind the Scenes with Man Robinson. We don't just talk about it, we be about it.
So, welcome back to Behind the Scenes with Man Robinson. We have Christine Swanson in the building, Detroit native, superstar, just visionary all. So we just learned earlier that she was a student of Spike Lee, and I have to ask you, how was it? How was it being taught or even working with Spike Lee?
Well, when I was a freshman at Notre Dame, I was a finance major, finance and Japanese, actually. And Spike Lee came to campus to talk about Do the Right Thing. And that was the first time that I ever saw a filmmaker. And then I had the realization that you can be a filmmaker, or people make movies for a living. No joke. I didn't know that growing up in Detroit.
Me neither.
Right? I didn't know that people did that for a living. You know, I live in LA now and I have children and they've been exposed to the industry since birth. I had no idea that all them shows we were watching on TV, that somebody made that, somebody wrote that, somebody shot it, somebody edited it. So when I saw Spike Lee, I was like, oh, that's what I want to do, right? I changed my major. I promptly changed my major. I did research on Spike Lee and discovered that he went to NYU Film School. And I decided at that point, that's where I'm going to go to film school. And I ended up going to film school. Spike Lee was my directing teacher my last year there. So it's a full circle moment for me. And it was great to be taught by him, because Spike would just bring in guest speakers. And it was like a master class, every class, right? Or he would take our whole class, like on a field trip, to the sound mixing house. And we would sit there while he's mixing, he got game, right? So it's like we just got a front row seat into filmmaking 101 from Spike Lee, you know? Wow. So anyways, like, he always served as that long distance kind of mentor who was really right there in front of me. And Spike really served as a role model for me to get into the industry. I think he inspired a whole generation of filmmakers to make films. All the black kids at NYU were there because Spike Lee was their idol. So yeah, we were all like influenced by Spike Lee. So he just has that enduring legacy in our minds as somebody who went to school, made movies, and told stories the way he wanted to tell it. And to this day, that's the spirit that I carry inside of me as a filmmaker. Like, the only way to describe it is I'm an independent filmmaker, but I can work in networks in a studio capacity, of course, with great result. But that spirit inside of me is one of auteur or visionary who understands story from a specific point of view that speaks to your voice. So that's what I learned from Spike, and I will never sway from that, because that really is the foundation of who I am as a storyteller.
Well, you're not the only one to feel that way, because evidently CNN identified you as the most promising filmmakers to emerge from NY since him and Scorsese and others. So how was that, being on that type of list?
Well, it's funny because I was so young when they said that. Right. And at the time, it sounded like, whoa, that's cool. And then it's funny, over the course of my career, I've had like this, like, so coming out of NYU, I was really celebrated and hit some doubles and some triples. And then it was like nothing for a long time, because actually I have four children. And I took like 15 years off from filmmaking to raise them. So that was a little bit of a lull. And then it was just trying to come back in after that. It's like, it was like I was starting over, like I had done nothing, you know? Wow. And that in and of itself is kind of hard, especially as a woman, but I don't whine in that space. Because you put me toe to toe with any guy filmmaker.
Go ahead, say it.
I'm a win. Like,
yeah,
I'm a winner, you know? So it's like, let's go, you know? Right, right. So that's not the issue in terms of how I see myself. Mm-hmm. But that is a systemic issue in the industry, in sometimes in the way that they see women. So that's not my problem, but it is my problem, and it's something that, you know, I've learned to navigate since I've been back working. And I don't have the answer to that. All I know is for myself, you know, every time at bat, you know, I'm aiming for the rafters.
Thank you.
You know? So if somebody else can hit it to the rafters like me, you go look at them, you know? But if I'm hitting it to the rafters, let's go. Right?
I love it. See, now that makes me want to I want to see what else you got. I want to see everything you got now, because this energy you're giving off, I feel it through the screen. So I thank you very much. So with you being in that same category, Spike, you in there, have you ever considered going back teaching yourself?
You know what's funny? I actually teach screenwriting at the University of Georgia in Athens.
You do?
Yeah, so I teach in the low residency MFA screenwriting course. And the way that it's done is I go to Athens twice a year for a week and I teach a master class. Then everything else is done online. See, you didn't know that, huh?
No, I didn't know that. I'm about to sign up. So, next time you're out here, call me. We can go over there and meet you.
I'm going into my, I think, fifth year.
Wow, no, I didn't know that. No.
I've been doing this. I've been teaching for a minute now. So it's very much a part of who I am as well. I believe that... when I teach at Georgia, these are people who are paying tens of thousands of dollars in tuition for an education to learn craft from the likes of people like me, all right? Mm-hmm. But what I also do is every city that I teach in, every city that I work in, for instance, when I was working in Chicago, shooting PD, when I was working in Canada, shooting Clark Sisters, every weekend I would offer a master's screenwriting class to whomever wants to come. So, and you don't have to pay tens of thousands of dollars to do it, but the quality of education and experience and expertise coming from me and my own time in the trenches is very valuable. And I often want to offer that up to particularly people in my own community, because just like you and I didn't know that people made movies for a living, we did not have access, or we did not have models or role models or examples of what this looks like and how it's played out. I just want to be a part of that solution, right? So that's why I'm committed to coming to Detroit and doing workshops. And typically, wherever people want me to do a workshop, if you set it up, if you build it, I will come, given time in my schedule. So it's just a commitment that I made, and you can afford my class, put it to you that way. So it's not unaffordable for anybody who has a desire to learn craft and screenwriting on a high level.
I appreciate that coming from, you know, being another Black African-American, that you're giving back like that. That's dope. That's very wonderful. Especially being from Detroit. I know filmmakers in Detroit right now, and they make films, and they're out, they're produced and all that, but, you know, they don't have stuff like that. In Georgia here, we can go right down the street but in Detroit, it's not like that. So with that being said, so any inspiring, you know, being a graduate yourself from a film school, Spike Lee graduated from film school. Mm-hmm. Not everybody graduates from film school who makes it big in film. Do you recommend that inspiring actors go to film school or directors?
No.
That's my answer too, by the way.
No. Remember when I did it, it was, that was over 20-something years ago. And that was when we were still shooting on film. My first film I shot on 35 millimeter, right? So the barriers to entry were more narrow, right? Now it's just opened up, and with technology and access to equipment and resources, it's like anybody's game now, right? Yeah. My recommendation is there has to be an adherence to the study of craft so that you can make your own story elevated, right? You don't have to and still be successful. There's a whole studio in Atlanta owned by a guy who adheres to that philosophy, like telling stories that speaks to his audience in the way that he wants to speak to it, and it works. So there are enough examples of people who did not go to film school and who are more successful than I am. So film school is not necessary, but you have to ask yourself, what is your goal? Is your goal to make money by exploiting all the wonderful opportunities in this medium? If you want to do that, you can do that. You know, do you want to use an art form to elevate a craft or an idea or a theme in such a way that it speaks to people directly? You can do that too. You can do both, actually. Mm-hmm. You can actually combine both and do that as well. So I'm a big advocate of that. So you don't need film school, and now there's too much information available on YouTube for anybody to make an excuse as to why they don't utilize craft more specifically, right? Mm-hmm. So, but you don't have to be that kind of storyteller. You understand? Like, there's so many ways to skin a cat. It's who are you, and how do you feel connected in terms of your storytelling, and can you communicate that to an audience? And if you can do that and make a living, like, who cares what I say?
Well, we do care what you say, okay? We definitely care what you say. And I think you were referencing Tyler Perry and there's other ones besides him that actually are living proof of what you're saying.
Yeah.
And you are 100% right. In 2008, because I say this in all the speakings that I do across, the 2008 was the year that, or 2007, year that, you know, you really realized that it was an independent game because of the cameras dropped so dramatically.
That's right.
And it was game time. But since then, another thing happened, and that is women in the film industry, how it's opened up and it's elevated so high. Like, what do you think that was? How do you think that came about? That it's you guys, and I'm saying you guys as, you know, women against men right now, are so powerful in the film industry right now.
Well, it's really righting a systemic wrong that has gone on for too long. When women represent over 50% of the population, and maybe the film and TV watching audience, it makes no sense whatsoever that they were and still are to a certain degree underrepresented behind the cameras. Makes no sense whatsoever. So I think the influx of women working today is really to right that system wrong. But still, the same rules apply. It's like the cream is going to rise to the top in terms of talent. You can have thousands of women doing things. It doesn't mean like every single one of them is enormously talented. But let me say this. Men have been doing this for a long time, and I will tell you, the majority of them are not enormously talented either. So all things being equal, I'm like, I think women deserve that chance at bat in the same way that men have had. And like I said, like, you know, I play basketball, like, you know, growing up. So I'm just like, just give me the ball. Just give me the ball. And I'm going to put it in the hole. Like, so if you can stop me, then here, it's you take the ball out, you know. But give me the ball and I'm going to win. And I don't care, men, women, whatever. I'm about to dunk on you, you know? So it's just, I have that kind of mindset. But even if I didn't, and even if, like, I don't care if a bunch of poorly talented women are getting opportunities, again, it will never right the wrong of enormously poorly talented men working in this industry for so long that have systemically kept out women. So we need to right that wrong. I don't know what the answer is, except equal parity. 50% of the population is women. I want to see 50% of the industry behind the scenes be women. And what's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with it, right. Especially when 90% of the consumers are women. So
that's what I'm saying. So it's like, it's time. It's okay. It's happening already. You know, it's happening already. But I'm also a big advocate for our community, and our community consists of men and women. And men and women with varying points of views, right? And I'm an equal champion of young men also having opportunities to express themselves through storytelling. And I always get excited at having the opportunity to talk to and mentor and teach young Black men who are eager and excited to learn from someone like me. So you give me a brother like that, and I consider it an honor and privilege to mentor them, because I'm a mother of three Black sons. So when I look at things regarding gender parity issues, I also have a level of sensitivity where I want to make sure that we make room for our Black boys as well. And I have a Black daughter. So I want them all to feel like they have a seat at the table that I'm creating, you know. Wow. So it's I have love for us as a community, men and women, and it's not us against them. Like we're a team,
yeah,
together, and we can do more together than being pit against each other. So great for women to have more opportunities, but I'm also about building opportunities for men as well in ways that they can articulate themselves in storytelling in such a way that they feel seen and heard. And if you get the ball and you friggin' dunk on somebody and knock it out the park, then it's your game, bro, you know, and I want you to win too.
Well, you know, it's thoughts like that and emotions like that that make you who you are, and to make it why it's so important that, you know, we have these influences by women like yourself to even be heard. You have a stage, a huge stage, and you are heard, and you influence me. You know, filmmaking is a lot of different areas. It's not just a great story. It's not just a great acting. It's not just the craft of that, you know, telling the story. It's more or less like now you have the technical side.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be an independent filmmaker, Man Robinson, now let's see that you make your film look like ours.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if you can't do that, then you don't need to be in this position. Mm-hmm. And it's so many different things going in, the right equipment, the right camera, the right lighting, the right DP, like you said, you had in the
right car, crew. Get the right crew, yeah, so that they make you look good.
Exactly. So it's a lot to it. So that's one of the things I want to add to what you're saying. You don't need film school, but you do need to learn.
Yeah.
It. Simple. Yeah. Decide where you want to learn it, but you got to learn it.
And you build skill set over time with experience.
I agree.
Like if you look at all our earlier works, you know, you're like, I would, you know, I would,
yeah. Yeah,
you know, that's growth. That's growth, right? Yeah. And like that's what people need to understand is the minute you have an idea to be a filmmaker, the goal to be a filmmaker, you don't win the national championship in year one. You know, like I'm thinking Jordan in The Last Stand, but
yeah,
let's go. It takes time to build that championship mentality and championship team. And the best investment is on yourself and growing as an artist. But it's also a business.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you have to put the two together all the time, or you're going to be stuck in the artistic lane with your vision by yourself, broke and hungry.
Yeah.
You understand? As the business is constantly changing and evolving, and you have to understand that as well, you know? So there's a lot to it that needs to be unpacked and understood and studied, you know? And it's a collaborative thing, you know. I'm telling a crew of 100 people sometimes like what to do, you have to be able to, like, did you play sports, man? Like,
oh yeah, yes.
What'd you play?
Basketball and football.
That's right. So that it's a team sport. There's no way else I can explain it, you know? Yeah. And as a director, you're the quarterback. Mm-hmm. Okay. Your producers are maybe the coaches, right? So it takes a collective effort of a team to win a game. And if you don't know how to communicate, if you don't know how to articulate, and if you don't know how to motivate, ooh, I did not mean for that to rhyme, but that sounded good. But you gotta be able to do all those things at once while you're tap dancing, right?
Yeah.
So it's more than a notion. It's more than a notion. And let me tell you this. Film school allowed me an opportunity to practice all of that and fail. Let me repeat that. Film school was it was like really a breeding ground to practice all those different types of skill set and fail in a safe place. That's it. That's all it did. So that you can learn from that and grow from that. So when you go out into the real world, you have already failed and fallen flat on your face. So that doesn't scare you anymore. So you take all those experiences and then you parlay that into, okay, keep going. That's all that did. Now, without film school, you can still do that too. It's just now is on your dime. It was still on my dime in film school, but you kind of could borrow money from Uncle Sam to do it. But this in real life, that might be your money in real time. So, you know, but the same thing applies. And that is, you're building your skill set over time by doing and by failing. And failing is really the building blocks for your future success.
Well, you dropped a bunch of jewels here on our podcast. Mm-hmm. And you took one of our rhymes, because our podcast is motivational. It's motivational, right? Educational, and inspirational. And you damn sure are inspiring. Love, we love your work. We love your energy. We love it all. And we want to see what you got going. We want to know what's next. Can you tell the audience what you have next?
So I'm fielding a lot of different opportunities right now, and for me it's very important that whatever project that I do, there's something that I can bring to the table that will elevate it. So while I can direct anything, I really can, going forward I want to make sure there's something that I can really contribute that is going to be worthy of my investment, not only into the project, but my investment of time that I take away from my husband and my children, you know. And then to that end, my husband and I, Michael Swanson, who is a studio executive at NBC Universal, so he works on the television side. We have our own production company called Faith Filmworks, and we're constantly looking at projects to do within our own production company. So now, there's a lot that we're building right now that will work, through our production company. And honestly, the best producer I've ever worked with in my life just happens to be Michael Swanson, who is my husband. So there's something to be said for sleeping with the producer.
Yeah, or the right one.
Well, the one you're married to, hopefully.
You can't Me Too your husband. So
okay. Yeah.
There you go. So that's great. We thank you so much for coming. And, you know, I'm going to watch the movie again tonight, the Clark Sisters, because I'm from Detroit, if you didn't know that.
Yes.
We talked about it. Yes. So thank you so much. And we'll see you again. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, okay?
Yeah. Can you tell us where to find you? Like, what's your Instagram?
CSwanson44 across all platforms. And on Facebook, I'm Christine Swanson.
Okay. Look for my follow in a few minutes, okay?
Will do. All right.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for tuning in to Behind the Scenes with Man Robinson. Our aim is to genuinely encourage and inspire you with the compelling stories and content we provide, in hopes that you'll inspire others. For info on upcoming episodes and all things surrounding film, techniques, and motivation, follow at Man Robinson on all social platforms. View on blackfilm.com, manrobinson.org, or stream anytime on Spotify and iTunes.